We are back on Flip the Cash. I'm your host, Nate List. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And with me, Mr. Ethan Motz. You can find him on Twitter at Ethan Motz. Got his own name on Twitter. Good for you. No chance I'll get mine. Although I haven't tried. So last episode, Ethan, we released this to a new audience, a dormant audience, an audience that had been, you know, it was like a garden that hadn't been watered in a while, okay? And we watered that garden, and that garden responded. A couple of weeds, a couple flowers started to bloom. Things are looking up. What do you have to say to the new listening audience, and how are you feeling about this episode we're about to dive into?
In the very, very electric words of Cameron Newton this weekend, we're back, you know?
That's right.
We're back, baby. We're excited to have everybody back. Looking forward to breaking down new topics, fun topics, you know, not necessarily always fantasy football related, but there's definitely correlation there. So excited to have this whole group back on board.
That's the big thing, though, right? That's that fantasy football card collecting. If you're in it for the long haul, you know, you've got favorites that play the sport. That's part of your PC collection. But for those of us that are looking to flip, we're using that fantasy football knowledge. And a lot of what you're going to hear on this show, similar to what you hear on Clear the Cash, there's a lot of ways you can use the information that you gather to turn it into a profit. And that's a big part of what this show is about. You mentioned Cam Newton. We should start with one of his teammates. Now, newly reunited teammate in Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, and with Christian McCaffrey, I think we're going to have to sell the hype for him coming back from this injury. I know there was a pretty big dip in his card prices from the hamstring injury. I know 2 years in a row, we've all kind of had that fear, right? Is this going to be another lost season? But luckily, he's back. You know, the hamstring did flare up. He was also evaluated for concussion this last week. But, you know, his prices have ticked up. And if you look at some of the historic running back numbers from card prices, you know, you'd be shocked, right? Like a few weeks ago, we were looking at Derrick Henry silver PSA 10s for $600. That's insane, in my opinion, right? And so McCaffrey's back. He's got that hype. He's a very popular figure in the public eye. But if we look at his numbers, right, from splits with Cam and without Cam, there's some pretty damning numbers here. So if we look at these splits, right, there are 33 games that with Cam in and then 23 out. And in those games, let's just look at rushing touchdowns, for example. So in the games with Cam in the lineup, CMC's only had 11 touchdowns in those 33 games. That's pretty not so fun, right? But in the 23 games without Cam, he's had 18 rushing touchdowns. If we look at his yards per game, same thing. With Cam, that number is 50.7 in 33 games, right? That's a pretty low average there. In those 23 games without Cam, 79.1. So, I mean, these prices are just getting a little too high for my liking for a running back that's coming off of another injury-filled year. I think, you know, if you want to pick his card prices up now, while they're a little lower, they're still a little suppressed, and then just wait another week, you know, maybe sell that hype that you get from waiting that second week to build up that hype, I would do that, right? But I'd be very careful doing that because that rug could be pulled out from underneath you pretty quickly should anything happen from an injury standpoint. So I'm selling the hype on McCaffrey.
I mean, I love Christian McCaffrey. There's no question about it. I know you love him. You know, this is a guy that's currently 25 years old. He's right in the middle of his prime. Unfortunately, he's lost quite a bit of it to injuries, but we've never really seen a back that's as diverse as him playing on the level that he has. You know, I mean, one of the more incredible seasons that we've ever seen in 2019, averaging 29.3 fantasy points per game, but we're actually seeing his snap share slide a little bit, which is probably a good thing in terms of his health because Carolina cannot put this workload on him forever if they want him to survive. But look, week one against the Jets, basically a 90% snap share, RB1 overall. But if you look at week two, you look at week 10, this is a guy that saw 68%, 58%, finishes the RB3 and the RB4. I mean, he's so electric. He doesn't need 80% of the snap share. He doesn't need 90% of the snap share. I agree on the card front. There's definitely a sell factor built into it. I love Christian McCaffrey. My hope for him is that one day we get this guy that's you know, 10 to 12 carries a game, maybe less, that hybrid slot receiver type option where he can still see 7 to 10 targets a game, I think his longevity would be better. These injuries are piling up, man. I mean, I feel the same way about Barkley, but Barkley's built way more rock solid than McCaffrey.
Yeah, it's just so weird. And I think with the running back position as a whole, teams are starting to move towards a more specialist backfield anyway. So you start to see these workhorse running backs kind of die off within the landscape of the NFL, as we've been accustomed to seeing over the past, I don't know how many decades, right? So with running backs, they're just so volatile. They're tricky to deal with. I'd probably, you know, look to stay away from them in general. I mean, again, the numbers for Henry's PSA Silver Prism 10 was at $600 at a peak. McCaffrey's hit $830 a couple months ago. I mean, that's, you know, to me, that's asinine, right? I'd rather invest that money elsewhere if I can.
Yeah, it's hard not to click the button on Christian McCaffrey. It's hard when you see his cards out there, if you're a fan of McCaffrey, to not want to just click buy on everything you see. But I think you're exactly right. I think we have to be a little more cautious, especially with all the lost time. And there's probably going to be a continued dip in the future. Would you say that we're going to see his prices slide a little more, or do you think you're going to see more of a climb?
I think the climb has already started. And, you know, again, like I mentioned earlier, if you want to pick up some of these cards while they're still climbing and they haven't hit anywhere near the peak, and then sell, that's not a bad option, right? It's kind of risky. You know, if anything happens, another injury, all of a sudden that perception could be so negative that you lose money, right? But relative to the cost, it's pretty low risk there. And again, I mean, that peak of $830 a few months ago, it's a pretty high peak, right? So I think you're not going to see that peak again. But even if you hit half of that, right, or 500, you know, that's not bad from that standpoint. So you could definitely flip for a couple $100 profit on these cards, right? Whether the silver prisms or any of the inserts, right? I know those are popular, the color blast, right? Kabooms, things of that nature. So, you know, you can definitely make a quick flip here, but I would not be holding for very long.
Okay, you heard it there, guys. Well, let's transition. What's interesting about this show is we're going to talk a back, and we're going to talk a quarterback that's associated. So with that being said, you mentioned his name at the top of the episode. Cam Newton is back in Carolina, and seems like things might be good.
Yeah, things look great. I think objectively we can argue that he's got the best receiving core he's ever had, right? DJ Moore's fantastic. He's a true alpha. You know, Robbie Anderson's been streaky, you know, but, you know, you look at Tommy Trimble's an ascending asset there. McCaffrey's McCaffrey, right? Terrace Marshall, I think, is another fantastic player. You know, and keep in mind, even a player like that, you know, we look at a guy like Chris Godwin, for example, first couple years in the league, didn't do much, right? He was averaging, what, 10 receiving yards per game his rookie year. So we have to be patient with Terrace Marshall, but I think Cam does have the best weapons he's had in his career. We told you to stash him for this exact occasion. We saw so many injuries piling up at the quarterback position across the league and so many incompetent backups you know, that teams were having to play. And so eventually Cam was going to get the job, and he did, right? We didn't think it was necessarily going to be Carolina. I mean, we're not going to dig into that monstrosity of a situation that they created for themselves. But even with Cam, I think, I mean, he was jobless for quite some time. And, you know, whether that's because of the skill, but whether it's because of injury history, or, you know, is it arm strength? Has he lost a step? Whatever it might be, is it because he wasn't vaccinated for some time and he's reportedly vaccinated now? You know, a lot of those factors that contributed, and that makes him, in my opinion, a pretty volatile asset still. And if we look at his prices, right, like we'll use his 2018 Optic Downtown, for example. So prior to any kind of signing, right, for a few months before the season started, that card was selling on average for around $75, right? A little bit higher sometimes, a little bit lower. The day the signing was announced, that card jumped about $220 in price. And now it's settled in the last probably, you know, 4 or 5 days, week or so, around $170. So still a pretty sizable jump, over 100% profit, 120 some odd percent profit. That's a big chunk, right? And so with Cam, as fantastic as he is, I love Cam, right? I'm rooting for him. But with his card prices, they're pretty, you know, at a pretty nice peak to where I'd be comfortable selling and netting this profit to move something into something else.
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense. He is, though, you know, maybe the most polarizing fantasy quarterback we've seen in some time. I mean, Lamar Jackson's hit sort of this trajectory. I remember Mike Vick. Some of these guys that they're just, there's such a playmaker on the field. You can't take your eyes off of him. And Cam Newton's bigger than life itself, right? Like he's that like quintessential celebrity. Like he's going to be in front of the camera no matter what. When his career's over, Cam is going to do something culturally relevant. Like he will be, you know, he'll be like the Shaq of the NBA, right? He's just going to be up in front of everything all the time. But while he's on the field, this is a guy that's been hyper volatile as a quarterback. I mean, much of his production has been with his legs throughout his career. The last time we saw him with any semblance of passing opportunity, 2020, aside from deep ball accuracy, we saw a fairly inaccurate quarterback, albeit it was 1 year in a system that he wasn't used to. But I can see your point. This is a guy that's, 32 and a half years old now, so he's still pretty young by quarterback standards. But I think you're right. If there's a profit you can take and run, why not take it, right?
Yeah, I think if you want to invest in a riskier, higher, you know, volatility asset perhaps that still gives you, you know, one, that same kind of margin that you can get on your return, but gives you an even higher ceiling, why not do that, right? Like, I'm not saying you can't make money with Cam or he's not a, you know, decent longer term investment, because like you said, right, socially I think he's fantastic, right? He's captivating. He's always got the attention on him, the spotlight, and a lot of people love him, right? Like I love watching Cam in any capacity. There's this documentary even, it's basically him and I think Ocho Cinco and a couple other guys even just talking about, you know, their time off. And they got to talking about something as trivial as McDonald's, right? And Chad Ocho Cinco telling Cam about, you know, like, you gotta, you know, get to my diet to play better, stuff like that. So, you know, Cam's funny. He's like, what are you talking about, man? This is nonsense. But, you know, those kinds of interviews, really, I think, are endearing to fans. And so for that reason, I think he's solid from that perspective. I just would rather prefer something a little less risky, I think.
Smart, man. I mean, that's what people should do. Look, if they're worried about the money side of things, then that's great advice. If you're willing to just watch your dollars go up and down and probably down over time, then continue to hold Cam. But I think you're right. Yeah, moving to something less volatile for sure. And maybe AJ Dillon is that less volatile option. Is that potentially true?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, AJ Dillon is fantastic. The guy's a human bowling ball. And I mean, he's 6 foot, 247. His closest comp on Player Profiler, Steven Jackson. Nate, do you know how many balls Steven Jackson caught in 1 year? His highest number of receptions?
I heard it was a lot.
Oh, yeah? How much is a lot?
How much is a lot? I don't even know how much a lot is. How much is a lot?
A lot is 90. It's a lot.
Woo!
Steven Jackson was a big boy, and he could catch passes. And I think Dillon has very similar skill set, right? I know a lot of the knock coming out of, obviously, college and then the combine and that whole kind of period of time was that, oh, AJ Dillon can't catch passes, they won't utilize him in the passing game, Aaron Jones is such a slick receiver, blah blah blah, right? Sure. But if we look at that Boston College team, they literally had no passing offense. I mean, no passing offense. The most receptions by any player in Dillon's final season was 36. Like, Rondale Moore had 12 catches in one game as a freshman against Ohio State, right? One game. This is insanity. So, of course, right, you didn't really get to see those receiving chops from Dillon, but the guy is unbelievable. He's great at the goal line. He's electric in space. What does he not do?
Yeah, no, you're right. And so, you know, going into the year that he was drafted, his coach, Steve Adazio, Brian Gutekunst, GM of the Packers, they had talked. Steve Adazio had said, look, this guy is much better at catching the ball than his numbers would reflect. You know, I know a lot of people want to point out 2017 AJ Dillon and go, well, he had 300 rush attempts and zero catches. And it's like, yeah, that's true. But if that was the narrative you were going to live and die by, and you look at the stat sheet today, 18 targets, 16 catches. I can't tell you what those two balls were doing that he didn't catch. Maybe they sailed way the fuck out of the end, you know, out of the field to the crowd. Maybe went into the grandstands. I have no idea. All I know is the guy's running at like a 93% catch rate right now. And every time he's on the field, he's doing something special. And Aaron Jones' role is very defined in this offense. He's hurt right now, though. So we're probably going to see AJ Dillon's prices go up. And based on what we've seen from Derrick Henry and the Titans, and Derrick Henry getting shelved behind DeMarco Murray for a while. It's not a surprise to see a guy like A.J. Dillon, when given opportunity, showing out, because it's always been in his talent profile. So does that extend to his cards?
Yeah, I think that it does. So you've seen the ceiling on these running backs. Obviously, running backs might be lower upside, lower ceiling when it comes to overall investment appeal, right? Because they're running backs, right? They have shorter shelf lives. They don't have the appeal that a quarterback does in the hobby. But that doesn't mean you can't make incredible profits. And if you look at his card prices, yeah, they've ticked up recently, naturally, with the injury news around Aaron Jones. But Aaron Jones has had MCL issues for the last 3 years. He's not a particularly big guy. He's, 26 years old? I can see a situation where, like you said, Derrick Henry was shelved for DeMarco Murray, an aging DeMarco Murray, and then Deion Lewis, the diminutive in stature Deion Lewis, right? If you put those two together, Deion Lewis looks like Derrick Henry's literal child. It's like he brought him to the field. He's like, hey, little buddy, come sit down, watch dad go to practice and run over grown men, right? So who knows what they were thinking? And look who was in Tennessee originally when Derrick Henry was drafted and who didn't utilize him like that for the first 2 years. Who's that guy? LaFleur, right? So same kind of, that correlation there, I think, is pretty similar. And we've seen what Derrick Henry can do. Again, A.J. Dillon is a fantastic pass catcher. He's a monster. He's great at the goal line. And that touchdown equity really inflates, card prices and appeal players because it's, that vividness bias, right? We see these touchdowns. We see the points on the board go up. We see the little ticker at the bottom of the screen. All these things factor into this. And I think even though A.J. Dillon's prices are spiking a little bit now, it's not the worst idea to get in now because they're going to continue to climb, sure, but you just don't want to buy at the top. So I think A.J. Dillon could still be a fantastic investment. Again, in Dynasty, I'm trying to get him. I'll probably pick up some of his cards just to flip. Even in the short term, I think there's definitely room to do that.
I mean, Green Bay is very much one of those places where I think they certainly want to establish this power dynamic back when it starts to get cold out. Listen, people can try to say these narratives are bullshit all you want, but we listen to coaches around the league talk about what a run game does for a quarterback, what it does for an offense. When you're beating the holy hell out of a defense and every down you have to deal with a guy like A.J. Dillon and playing in Green Bay and the weather sucks and it's cold and it's windy and it's wet, that guy is a flipping hammer. And he's going to be with the Packers for a long time. I think this is a hit. I think they nailed it with this selection. I think a lot of people thought that this was probably a very average pick. But we're talking about a guy that is also insanely athletic. Higher speed score than Derrick Henry. Higher burst score than Derrick Henry. I mean, massive volume in college similar to Derrick Henry. And you could say the pass catching part of his game didn't exist. He's proving it wrong right now. And it would not shock me if in the future this guy is a 50 target type receiver and carries a massive workload as a runner as well. The question is, if it's not with Aaron Rodgers, will it be with Jordan Love?
That's an interesting question. I think Green Bay really screwed up that draft. We can all objectively say it was just a weird draft overall. From Jordan Love in the first round, A.J. Dillon looks like a great pick in the second, towards the end of the second round. Josiah DeGuara in the third.
Josiah DeGuara, baby.
Right? Like, come on. It's just weird. And I don't know if Jordan Love is going to be any good. I don't really think he's ready for the NFL. He might be. He might be a serviceable quarterback. I just don't see it. He didn't look ready against Kansas City. I know he's a first-round pick, but he's a later first-round pick. And when it comes to quarterbacks, that doesn't really mean much for franchises. I mean, we see all the time, even, mid-first-round picks. You look at a Dwayne Haskins, right? He's picked at 15 overall by Washington, and now he's a third stringer behind Mason Rudolph, right? And I think, unfortunately, Jordan Love, he's got some good tools, right? He's got that arm talent. If anything, it might materialize down the road. But for me, I don't think Jordan Love is next in terms of being the next big thing. If you look at his card prices, for example, his base prison PSA 10, just 2 weeks ago, when things were kind of in flux, that card spiked up to around $200, and it's since dropped to about $70. So, not the greatest price drop there. But with Love, I think, you know, if you were able to get a profit from that spike, fantastic. I would, you know, maybe hold a little bit longer until, you know, the draft comes around. Right before the draft, there's maybe not, you know, any speculation of Green Bay going to some kind of quarterback solution. Maybe Aaron Rodgers comes back. I doubt it. But, you know, maybe sell around there when there's going to be a little bit of hype. But long term, I don't see Jordan Love being an answer at all.
Okay, well, here's a couple things. So Rodgers was on a holdout, right? Rodgers is signed through the end of 2023. So, you know, if Davante Adams sticks around, if Aaron Rodgers decides to play at 37, 38 years old, there's a chance. And what that does is that shelves Jordan Love. And I will say what's interesting about Jordan Love's draft capital is he was just two picks later than Aaron Rodgers himself, who was a late pick. But I don't disagree. When we look at the hit rate on quarterbacks that weren't drafted towards the very beginning of the first round, we find a lot of guys that don't pan out. Conversely, we find a lot of guys at the top of the draft that don't pan out either. So it's an interesting dichotomy. The real death knell for me is that Player Profiler comps him to Dan Orlovsky, which makes me want to hit myself over the head with a frying pan, which is probably what happened to Dan anyways. But nonetheless, the real question is, what is the long term? Now, I think his card price is, if Rodgers plays next year, and we know there's an end to Rodgers one day. If Rodgers plays next year, then Jordan Love's prices have to dip, right? Like if because Rodgers is going to be 38. We're watching Brady play. We watch Breeze play to 41. We're watching Brady play to 45. In people's minds, are they going to go, well, Rodgers is signed till what? I think he's signed till age 40, basically. 40. So if he's signed till age 40, that's two or three more years. What are people going to think about Jordan Love's card prices?
I think inevitably, if just, you know, we're going to play this out hypothetically. So let's say Rodgers does stay around. I think what happens is you start to see that dip naturally, right? The disappointment, like, oh man, you know, I thought Love was going to take over. Maybe not. We're going to have to wait. So you will see a dip, right? People are going to pivot off of those cards. They're probably going to fall in value some more. And I think that actually would be a pretty solid buying opportunity, because as more time elapses and you start to look at the future, you have to wonder, okay, they did invest first round draft capital into this guy. His prices probably will tick back up. So there probably will be another buying and selling window if Rodgers does stick around. If there's any kind of opportunity to make a profit, though, or even break even, right? Sometimes breaking even and using that capital for other more upside plays or safer plays or whatever it might be is a very wise and pertinent thing to do. So I think, again, I don't think he's the answer. You're going to have probably another buying and selling window with the dips and the peaks, but I'm looking to get out as early as I can on Jordan Love. I just don't see this being a viable long-term play.
Man, I feel like the parallels are crazy on this episode, because we talked about A.J. Dillon in reference to Derrick Henry. Now I'm going to talk about Jordan Love in reference to Aaron Rodgers playing behind Brett Favre, because he didn't play for the first 3 years of his career. I mean, he was shelved behind Brett Favre for 3 years and didn't play till year four as a first-round draft pick with a fifth-year option. So maybe, just maybe, the plan all along was to make him sit the same amount of time till Rodgers retired at the expiration of his contract, so Jordan Love could step in and completely implode so this full draft class could come full circle on him. What do you think?
That's a galaxy brain crazy theory, and I'm here for it. I love
yes.
it. I mean,
yes.
I love those stories, right? Of, you know, somebody coming in and, you know, waiting for their opportunity. All of a sudden they get it. It's game over. They're a Hall of Famer, right? So I'd love to see that from Jordan Love. I think it could potentially happen. I just, if I'm assigning percentage and, you know, attributing risk and upside and all these things, I'd probably pivot now, buy back in later, right? Because you do still hold that upside, right? What if he is that guy that 3-4 years down the road, you know, same story plays out. We've seen it again. You know, those that don't remember history are bound to repeat it. So, you know, maybe we're repeating history with doubting Jordan Love here. So, you know, again, I think there are opportunities now to buy and sell, and there probably will be in the future as we go through those cycles. And, you know, you still have the opportunity to get back in on the upside or the downside, just depending on how you see it.
I mean, again, if Player Profiler comps mean anything, A.J. Dillon equals Steven Jackson. Jordan Love equals Dan Orlovsky. So, look, for those of you that are risk averse, it's very clear what you should and should not do here. I think Ethan's exactly right. If you can get out on some level of a profit on Jordan Love. I believe the way the Packers are playing now, the team is clicking. Hard to believe that Aaron Rodgers isn't the type of guy that wants to finish his career in Green Bay. Listen, I'm pushing 40 years old. I wouldn't normally admit that to anybody, but I feel intimate with this crowd of people, this garden that was unwatered. I feel like I owe you at least that. But hear me out. Here's my thing. My whole era growing up, everybody played on one team. Nobody left. You died in the jersey that you started in. And Tom Brady, to me, going to Tampa was like a shock. I never thought it would happen. I thought he was going to die in New England, and I could gladly hate that franchise for my entire existence. But now I actually like him. It's very weird. But Aaron Rodgers leaving Green Bay, to me, feels like it's not happening. I feel like he's going to finish his career in Green Bay, and I feel like we're not going to see Jordan Love for 3 years. That's what I'm betting. So, with that being said, if you could get out from Jordan Love with any semblance of a profit before he actually turns into Dan Orlovsky, I would do it.